Hello and welcome to A Journey Through the Bible. I'm Benjamin.
And I'm Johannes. We're two guys from Sweden, currently living in Montana, attending a school of biblical studies with YWAM. It's a 9-month long course where we get to study through the whole Bible. And in this podcast, we just want to share this journey with you and what difference the Word of God is making in our lives.
66 books, 5 times, 9 months. Let's go! Hey, welcome to episode 4.
Yeah, episode 4.
And this week we're going to take you on a journey through Mark.
Yeah, the first gospel
that
we did.
That we are doing.
Yeah.
The second gospel in the Bible.
Yeah.
Right?
But if we talk chronologically...
Oh. Now we're...
We'll get into all of that good
stuff.
Now
we're in deep water straight away. It's perfect.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, we had a week on Mark, our first gospel. First narrative that we did.
That was intense.
Super different from reading Paul's letters.
Where it's like you get 10 verses and you have so much to process that you don't know how what to do with yourself. And here it's more like, oh, I actually need to read these 45 verses to actually grasp what Mark is trying to tell us.
Yeah, that was so fascinating to me how like the different stories... Like, yeah, of course, there's truths in the stories, but also the way that they're structured, like... That communicates a bigger picture as well.
Yeah. But so who wrote this book?
Okay. Let's get into it, I guess.
I think, don't you think?
Yeah. I went with John Mark.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. I think that's fairly safe to say.
Most scholars would say that, absolutely. Not all scholars would say that he is the little boy running away naked in chapter whatever it is, 14.
We'll see that.
But yeah.
But I think there wasn't much debate that I saw, at least.
No, like there is some people, always people trying to say that these people did not write it.
But. Yeah, but we also see John Mark working like in other parts of the Bible. With
Paul
and Peter.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that he, what people say is that he probably wrote down what Peter was sharing in Rome.
Yeah, exactly. That's the theory I think I, after reading and studying a bit, that seems to be the most credible idea that Mark wrote it. Either starting before Peter's death or maybe after Peter's death.
That was a little hard.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know if I came to a conclusion. Exactly.
No, I don't either. All the lexicons I read through, I had to like take 3 of them at least to like, I don't know. This is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And all of them said different things. I saw everything from early 50s to late 70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think just historically and based on a lot of them had the same idea that it might have been early 60s.
Yeah. And we should probably mention that neither the author nor whoever the recipient would have been are actually mentioned in this book at all.
No.
Which is a little bit... uncommon for New Testament.
Sure, but you can kind of see that, in theory at least, who would be the recipient.
Yeah, but it's not mentioned. Like
no, okay, you're right.
Hey, I am Mark, and I'm writing to these guys.
But we can see that what he's focusing on in the gospel, you can see type of person he would write to.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we went with Mark, and you think it's somewhere early 60s.
Yeah, AD. Like 62 to 64, somewhere around there.
Yeah. I think I went somewhere around mid 60s.
Yeah. It was one of the lexicons had a good explanation why it would have been 62.
Okay.
And the other one had the same explanation, and it would have been 64. So I went with somewhere around there.
Yeah. So this is basically... And Mark would have been in Rome at the time.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what's happening in Rome is that Nero is like, he's a mad king who's just like this crazy dude who, basically there's no evidence, but most things points to it that he started the the fire in Rome.
Yeah, and blamed it on the Christians. Yeah, he was a madman.
Yeah.
Like, you guys should go out and look up Nero. I had no idea who he was before, but like reading about the stuff that he did,
yeah,
that's messed up.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just little messed up, it's really messed up. Like, for fun, in the evenings, go out and just chop people down.
Oh, yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, just go out and stab them. Why not?
And I think emperor. I heard a rumor, too, that he might have filled all of Colosseum with water to have a fight.
a naval battle.
Yeah, in Colosseum. How did they get so much water in there?
I wondered that, too. I heard that, too, and I was like, what? How?
He's a weird man.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and so that like would have started the persecution of the Christians,
yeah,
who were already kind of outsiders in the society, and people like to blame them for different things. And then this burning of Rome, and all of a sudden, like, there was full out persecution.
Yeah.
And if you were a Christian, you would most likely you would be like caught and killed in several different ways.
Yeah. So
within a couple of years.
Like, oh yeah, for sure. Christian like everything life. From getting lit as a living candle to fight lions and stuff like that. Really messed up stuff that the Romans liked to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird thinking about it.
Yeah, it was disturbing, like knowing the reality. And so probably we're thinking, I think both of us, that Mark wrote this in Rome during this time to the Roman Christians.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's what I believe. I think throughout the book, you see that he is really focusing on suffering and the worth of suffering and like what, like Jesus suffered, but he actually brought people to him through his suffering.
Yeah.
That people saw that he was the Son of God through his suffering.
Yeah.
So I just have a feeling that might be, the idea that Mark is writing to encourage these, the persecuted church in Rome.
Yeah, exactly.
And before 70 is what I would say.
Yeah, because that's when the destruction of Jerusalem happened.
Don't jump ahead, man.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there.
Maybe, hopefully.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Also, this is a long book, so I hope we get through this in an hour.
Less than an hour would be nice. But yeah, we'll try.
All right. So John Mark, who's a follower, he's like working with Peter and Paul and the super awesome guys in Rome during like heavy persecution, writing to the Romans. And you can see also in the book, there's like him explaining certain things that a Jewish audience would already know.
Yeah.
Like the customs of the Pharisees or like different words that they would already know if they were Jewish readers. So most likely it's to a Gentile audience.
Yeah, because he's like saying some things of little girl and in Hebrew and they just have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of like the premise of the book.
Yeah.
And
let's dig in. Yeah. Should we look at verse 1:1?
Yeah, okay. I love this beginning of it. It's just so packed.
Yeah. So verse 1:1 is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And you read this and you're like, yeah, sure.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
That's cool. But when you start thinking about it, it's really, really, really incredible what he's communicating here.
Yeah.
And also remember this. It's so important. Remember this verse throughout this whole book. It's just going to help you understand.
Yeah. Yeah, so should we unpack it a little
bit? You should.
Okay. So, yeah, I love this part. So, if we look at the word gospel first, it's Greek. I'm probably going to butcher this, but euangelion. Fancy. I think that was.
Okay. I have no idea.
No.
I don't speak Greek.
Probably not. Sorry, everyone who speaks Greek. But anyways, yeah, this is like a word which basically means good news, and which is what people would, when there was a new king in this time, when there was a new king on the throne, like there wasn't really, you know, social media and newspapers like that you could read that, oh, we have a new king. Like that could happen like miles away from where you live in the capital, right? And you would have no idea. And so what they would do is they would send out these people all throughout the kingdom that would walk and basically like shout like, hear the gospel, like the good news, we have a new king, you're living under his rule. That's kind of the like the meaning of the word gospel.
Yeah.
And so beginning it this way, saying this is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And basically he's saying like, that's Jesus. Yeah. Like this is Jesus Christ. He's bringing, like this is his kingdom we live in now. This is his, like, he's the king. He's the king who's on the throne.
Yeah. And okay. That would have been like cause for persecution straight away.
Oh, yeah.
Or death, actually.
Yeah, you're like challenging
the king.
Who's the ruler. Yeah. Who would have been the Roman emperor at this mm-hmm. time. That is some serious stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then we go on. So gospel of Jesus Christ. So Christ being the Jewish word Messiah, which is basically their waited for deliverer. The one who's gonna, like, the one who's the whom the prophets have been...
The anointed one.
Yeah, been talking about that he's gonna come, he's gonna bring the kingdom and, like, drive away, like, our oppressors. And he's gonna bring this physical victory to Israel. And we're gonna be free and we're gonna be the mightiest nation on earth. And we're, like, we're gonna be in the position that God wanted us as.
So as you read this, you need to remember that this is what the original reader and the original hearer that walked with Jesus, that's what they're waiting for.
Yeah.
Not the original reader, maybe. They would have known that Jesus was Christ, but...
Yeah. But yeah, as we walk through the story, people who encounter him, they're going to be like, if we're like, they're looking for that Messiah who's going to be the conquering hero who's going to drive away the Roman oppression
and save them.
Yeah. And save them from the Roman Empire and like bring this kingdom finally to like, we're going to be a great nation. Like that's what they're looking for. A mighty physical king. And just as we walk through the story, we're going to see that Jesus, like he's bringing something different. And then says the Son of God,
which that is what the emperor would have called himself.
Yeah.
The Son of God. He was worthy of worship in his own mind. So he called himself a son of a God. And that is even more dangerous to say this.
Yeah.
So when Mark is writing this, he's basically writing his own death sentence.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Maybe that's why he didn't put his name on it.
It could have been.
Yeah, I think so. Because heavy persecution, he didn't want to get caught out. And he didn't want the people who he wrote to get caught out. Exactly.
And also, like, if the theory is that he wrote this after Peter was dead, he would have seen his, like, his homie that was leading him, the apostle that he was following, hung on a cross.
Yeah.
You know, like, he would have seen him
die.
Yeah.
Yeah. This book is packed. Like, the premise for it really is like, hey, like our teacher posed us two questions for this book.
Yeah.
He said, this book really focuses on two questions. It's who is Jesus and what does it mean to follow him?
Yeah.
And for these people who are in Rome under heavy persecution and they're like, this Jesus guy sounds awesome, but is he worth like sacrificing my life for?
It's not like us that we're like, is it worth hanging with Jesus?
Yeah.
They're like, is it worth giving my life?
Yeah. Because that's most likely what it's going to lead to.
Yeah.
And you're going to be an outcast in society. Your family is most likely going to like reject you.
Yeah.
They might be the ones who turn you in.
And kill you.
Yeah. There is. Yeah. So this book is really packed.
Yeah.
That way.
It's almost like a letter of Paul. Just very intricate written.
Yeah. Or it's charged, I would say.
Yeah,
it's charged. Yeah. Okay. So that was one verse.
Yeah.
Cool.
We need to move a little quicker maybe. So should we jump into chapter 4?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's do it. So what has happened here, just to go really quickly, Jesus starts his ministry. He's like going out, starting to do miracles. He's meeting up with Simon and Andrew, aka Peter. And James and John.
Yeah.
And they were probably fishing together.
Mm-hmm.
They were partners at least according to Luke.
Yeah.
We don't see that here, but so they would have been out fishing. So that's his first disciples he calls there, and then he's doing a bunch of teachings and a bunch of healings.
Yeah, I think it's cool to see that, like, Mark communicates through the structure of his stories, stories as well.
Absolutely. They're
not necessarily chronologically, like, he's not bound to only talking chronologically.
He's telling a story.
Yeah.
He's not recording historical events in the right order as they were supposed to.
No.
So it's a little different than a normal narrative just because of that, because he's like kind of throwing things around where it fits.
Yeah.
Not saying that these are not real stories that Jesus did.
No.
Very important to know that.
Yep. But he's trying to communicate something else than being just like historical.
Correct.
Yeah, historically correct book. Like, this is not a history book that we read to know exactly how things went down in history. This is like
a book to read to know who Jesus was.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just very fascinating how he uses his structure and just knowing that too, that this is not a chronologically written book.
Yeah.
When you see times, pay attention, because there is something important there.
Yeah.
When there is a line, when he's actually talking about specific times, there is a reason why you do that.
Yeah. And so in this first, we can just quickly touch on it. In this first section, he is basically, there's one story about him calling some of his disciples, like, come follow me. And then we see stories of him healing and people really responding, like, in awe, like, wow, this is awesome. And it ends in chapter 2 with verse 12. It says that all were amazed and glorified God. Like, this was the response. Like, people were like, wow, who is this guy? This is amazing. And they glorify God. And then there's a story about him calling a follower again, calling a disciple. So the author is like saying, hey, like, here comes another story. Like, this is important. Look at this. And then that section ends in chapter 3, verse 6. And it says that the Pharisees went out and they held counsel on how to destroy him. So this is basically like showing the different reactions to Jesus. Some people were like on board immediately. We're going to like we're praising God for what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
And other people were like, hey, man, like, we need to destroy this guy. So that's just interesting how the author communicates.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting. I don't know if that has actually any super important purpose, but basically all the section starts that he's teaching at the sea.
Yeah.
Which is
fun. Yeah.
And also, like, his crew is growing every time he's going out teaching at the sea too. So it's very interesting to see how Mark uses this and just showing how his crowd is growing to the point where they can't even teach on land anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. 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 We'll see him like he like steps out in a boat to like not be like trampled by the crowd. Basically.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's so funny. So do you want to get into chapter 4?
Yeah. Let's get in there. That is something that we found fairly important because this...
Yeah. I would say very important.
Very, very important. Yeah. This parable kind of helps you decipher the rest of the book.
Yeah, it's like a key for it.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how he actually placed the key in the middle of the book so you actually could understand the rest of the book.
Yeah.
So the parable we're talking about is the parable of the sower.
Yeah.
When Jesus is teaching the crowd and talking about these different sowers or different seeds sown.
Yeah, the sower and the different seeds.
Yeah.
Or the different places where the seed
ends up.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the parable of a sower who's walking to sow his field or whatever. And he's saying that some of the seeds, they fell on the path where the birds came and devoured it immediately. Some seed fell on the rocky ground. And when it didn't have much soil, so when it sprang up, it had no depths of soil, and the sun rose, and it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and they grew up and choked it, and the seed couldn't yield any grain. And then other seed fell in the good soil and produced, like, 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So we see these like four different types of soil.
Yeah.
That seeds could.
And it's interesting too. It's like he's teaching this parable, mm-hmm. but he doesn't actually teach them what it means. He just gives them a parable and they don't understand.
Yeah. To the big crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there is this little, I read this four times. Okay, on the fifth time, I actually saw what it said. It was like, I actually got help to get it pointed out.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's in verse 10. Mm-hmm. And when he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
They asked him.
Key. Yeah.
I did not see the asked. Mm, I just, I don't know. I didn't connect that he asked, that they asked him what it meant.
Yeah.
But basically there we see the people, the first people led into the kingdom to understand because they wanted to. They asked to be led inside.
Yeah.
Where the rest of the people that heard his teaching, they were still on the outside.
Yeah.
They heard his teaching and they were amazed.
Yeah.
But they were not on the inside.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. It's like you have to, like, you have to choose to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
It's basically like what's being communicated here.
Yeah.
Like,
and we're not debating that it's works to get sanctified. For salvation. We're just saying that you have to choose to. You have to ask Jesus.
Yeah. And to those who ask, he does explain it.
Yeah. Which is so cool.
Yeah.
That he's willing to like, okay, sure, I'll explain it to you.
Yeah.
So what does he say?
So basically, let's see. Yeah, so the we see in verse 14, it says the sower sows the word.
The word.
The word of God. And what the different soils are is basically how people react to it. Like how their hearts are positioned to it. So the first one that's being sown along the path is like, he says this, that the person who hears it, like Satan immediately comes and takes it away. Like, that's just someone who, like, it just falls off.
Yeah. They hear it and it's like, whoa, that's just so cool. But it doesn't have any purpose in their life.
And then the ones that were sown on the rocky ground.
Yeah.
The ones who hear the word immediately receives it with joy, but they have no root. And when tribulation or persecution comes, they just fall away.
So we're talking about a festival Christian here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Basically, that's what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
It's like,
you're happy. Like, okay, this is a high. Like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like you receive it with joy. And then when you come back to reality and people ask you where you were this summer.
The summer house.
Are you actually going to say where,
like, exactly
where you went?
No, it's interesting. Oh. And then.
I didn't think about that.
And then the third one is even more scary.
Yeah. That
sadly,
one I think is.
That one hurts.
Yeah.
Really so much.
The third one is then the seed that was sown among the thorns. And those are the ones who hear the word. In chapter or in verse 19, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful.
So here is the whole idea with this. That's kind of messed up when you start thinking about it from that perspective. This is a plant that grows up and it looks like it's bearing fruit.
Mm, yeah.
So it basically is you're living your Christian life, but you're so consumed what the world has to give that you're like, you have Jesus there and you grow up. So like you are actually doing the growing, but you don't bear any fruit.
Mm.
You are a worthless piece of grass in the end. It's very harsh words, but that's what this
Jesus is
talking
very harsh
about.
Sometimes.
Yeah, no, this is what this parable talks about.
Yeah,
it's people that we're going to see that in a parable later on.
Yeah.
A guy that has been following everything on the outside, he looks perfect.
Yeah,
he looks perfect.
Yeah,
but he is so consumed by the world.
Yeah,
that he can't sell and go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he doesn't bear any fruit.
Yeah. And that's a hard one for like us today.
Oh, the
like,
Western world. So I think that's one of the biggest struggles that we have in the Western world. That's one of the biggest struggles I have.
Like, oh yeah, me too.
Where is the what do I let the world take over in my life? Mm-hmm. So it's really tough. Yeah. Really cool stuff though. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, it truly, truly is. And then he goes on to the last one, which is the good soil, which are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit, and they 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold.
Yeah. It's...
But what I kind of saw, and they walked us through in lecture as well, is how the last one, you kind of have to go through the other soils to get there.
Ooh.
Like, maybe it isn't really shown here, but I think that's kind of true. Like, there is going to be, like, this resistance for you to receive the word and, like, remember it and take it to your heart, which is the first one. And then there's also going to be this, like, you actually need to allow it to put, like, deep roots mm-hmm. into your heart. And then you need to endure through, like, the things that are coming against you. And I think this speaks very much to the Roman readers, the people in Rome, because they're like, we need to endure through all these things.
Oh, absolutely. And they have to fight.
And to be good soil, you have to fight for it.
Yeah, but I don't know if I agree with you to full extent there, though.
Okay.
Because, like, just thinking of using this parable with growing.
Uh-huh.
And that is the whole idea with growing. Like, a seed goes through everything of the same. It's just is how are you prepared to deal with it? This is actually
I don't think it's shown necessarily in there, but I think as Christians, we do go through these things.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think it doesn't say that either. It's just, are you rooted?
Yeah.
When these things are coming, when the sun is coming, do you have roots deep enough to continue to bring up water? Uh-huh. Yep. Or are you going to be scorched and like fall off the earth?
Yeah.
Same thing when you're growing and you're like, do you have enough nutrition
mm-hmm.
to carry fruit?
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But
basically, you have to make sure that you are not those other three.
Yeah.
You have to choose to be the fourth.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm saying.
I kind of like that though.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think like to me it is like I don't think this is like how people were created somehow.
No.
Like this is the choice you make.
Oh, for sure. You choose, it's like how are you?
I should have put it like that.
Yeah, how are you going to prepare the soil in front of you?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Yeah. And this is like the key. This key kind of unlocks these stories.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole next 11 chapters, you kind of use this key and you see what type of people Jesus is interacting with.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you see Herod consumed by the world.
Yeah. Who, like, almost got it.
He kind of did.
Yeah, he's like, this guy is, like, super cool. Or, like, we'll get there. Can we... We shouldn't jump ahead of ourselves.
Maybe. I don't know if we have time with Herod. Maybe.
We'll see.
Okay. No, it's actually a really good way of looking at structure, though.
Yeah.
We could actually go there almost now.
Yeah. Because what happens after this is Jesus does a bunch of other different miracles, and we see how people respond to it.
Uh-huh.
And there is a lot more to unpack. There is no way that we could unpack everything in this book.
No, we're just going to take some small podcast. Stuff.
Yeah.
And then we're there.
So we're there.
At 6-7, it kind of starts.
Yeah, so okay. So let's take the story of Herod and see how that compares to like the sower parable.
Yeah. But first of all, it's kind of interesting. Now we have what some people call a Mark sandwich. And it's just interesting overall to look at. But here, Mark actually uses his structure to tell a story. So he starts with sending out the 12 apostles.
Yeah.
So he sends them two by two to go out, and he gives them authority to go out and heal and teach the gospel.
Yeah.
And then we have the whole story of...
Oh, so we should say we're in chapter 6. That was verse 7.
And then we go into 6:14, and there you have the story of the death of John the Baptist.
Yeah.
And we come back to that.
Yeah.
But
that's,
then
that's by Herod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the apostles returning.
Yeah.
So he kind of frames it here and put up like the apostle went, the apostle came back.
Yeah. And in between we have Herod
this,
and John.
Yeah. This whole happening.
Yeah. Here. So he's basically saying, hey, like, pay attention to this story.
Yeah.
Like, there's something there.
There is something important here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that's a really cool way. Like, he communicates through like these subtle things that
he's like, this is really important. So let's make it really not obvious to find.
Yeah. It's kind of like you only really see that it's important after you've read it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you read about him sending out the 12, and then you get like the King Herod, and you're like, okay. And then you're reading that, and then all of a sudden they return, and you're like, wait, oh, there was more to that story? Why did he break it up?
Yeah.
And then you get to go back and look at the Herod and John
story. Super cool.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Herod, the King Herod.
Yeah.
He was convicted by John the Baptist because he had taken on his brother's wife.
Yeah.
As a wife.
Yeah.
So John had been kind of like, yeah, no, bro, you can't do that.
No.
That's not okay. So Herod's wife / sister-in-law, she is really angry at him because she doesn't like the idea of that.
Yeah.
But Herod, for some reason, have John in prison, which we don't see in this story why he's in prison, right?
I think he seizes him because of Herodias, his wife, but not really like anything more than that.
Oh, yeah, that says it there, sorry, yeah. In 17, for the sake of Herodias.
But he's still keeping him alive, and we can see that Herod is really like, he says Herod feared John, knowing that he was a righteous and holy man, and he kept him safe. And when he heard him, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he heard him gladly.
Yeah.
So he's like on the edge, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's like, oh, this is really hard what you're saying, John. Like, this is really like hard stuff. Like, how can I deal with this? But at the same time, he's like, I appreciate it. Like, he's speaking into my life. And I like to listen to this guy because he speaks the truth, you know? So he's like almost getting it.
Yeah. So where would you say he is?
As
a sower parable.
Yeah, I think he is the thorns.
The thorns, the third one.
Yeah.
Where he is so caught up by the world that he can't hear the message.
Yeah, because if you look at the second half of the story, beginning in verse 21 there, basically he's having this great banquet for all his friends and like
it's a big
all
party.
The nobles, like, yeah, he's throwing out a big party, you know? And then...
Like only kings can do.
Exactly. And he's like, he's living it up.
Yeah, for sure. For sure he is.
Kind of consumed by the world a little bit. And then...
A tiny
bit. And then Herodias' daughter, so his wife's daughter, puts on a dance for all the guests. And Herod is just like, wow, what an awesome dance. You can have whatever you want. Like... I'll give you half the kingdom if you ask for it. And then she plots with her mother and is like, we want the head of John the Baptist.
Which is messed up for her.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm imagining this like 10-year-old girl. I have no idea how old she was, but it's like, that's what I kind of imagining coming up and doing these dance moves and just, you know, a beautiful dance for the party. And then all of a sudden... She comes up, a little 10-year-old. I want the head of John the Baptist.
Yeah, that's
that's kind of messed up.
Yeah. And we see that Herod is like, he's sad about it.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
He was exceedingly sorry.
Yeah.
But because of his oath and his guests, he did not want to break his word. So I kind of interpret that like he is, you know, he hears the word and he's like, oh, that's really good. Like, I need to think about that. Like, I need to really like process that in my life. But all the cares of the world, they just choke it.
Yeah. He falls off.
Yeah. And he ends up killing John the Baptist.
Yeah.
So that's like one example of a person in these stories who are interpreted through the key that we were giving by the parable.
Yeah.
And it's basically just only the fourth one that is like the people that Jesus are looking for.
Not basically. That is the only person.
Yeah, okay, okay.
In harshness, okay, yeah. That is the only person who gets saved in the end.
Yeah, this, those people who are like not just willing to hear the parable, but actually go to Jesus and ask him, hey, mm-hmm. what did you mean? Like, yeah. I want to know.
I want to know because yeah. I want to be rooted.
I want in. Yeah. Do you want to be on the inside or do you want to be on the outside?
Are you stuck on the inside or the outside?
No.
I don't believe so either.
No, I don't think so.
I think it's like you can walk away from that commitment.
Oh, yeah.
But you can also walk into that commitment.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you lived on the outside,
open
if you were
policy.
Consumed by the world and you're like, I am consumed by the world.
And I don't know anyone who actually says that, but...
No, I have. No, okay.
You were whispering that to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I am consumed by the world.
Sometimes I feel like that, though. You know? You're consumed by things.
Yeah,
it's like, I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like college, that's being consumed by the world.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There is good things with college. Don't misunderstand me here. But people hunting for fun, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just one of those people who just weren't on the inside.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, I think this was also something that was posed to us in lecture of how Jesus is basically like people can choose to react. Either mm-hmm. you can be on the inside or you're on the outside.
Yeah.
And when you're on the outside, he's saying everything is in parables.
Yeah.
Like they won't...
You won't know the true truth
yeah.
until you're on the inside.
Until you come to Jesus.
Yeah.
And you ask him.
He's setting up the kingdom basically already there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we move from that frame.
Yeah.
We go into the feeding of the 5,000.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there something important we need to know there?
There's a lot of cool things.
I think the biggest thing for me is to see... The two biggest things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Is how many baskets was left over afterwards.
Okay. Yeah.
So we see that there was 12 baskets
mm-hmm.
in verse 42.
Yeah.
Chapter 6.
Mm-hmm.
And that this feeding happened in a place where it was Jewish people.
Yeah.
So this feeding is for the Jewish people
mm-hmm.
and we have 12 baskets left.
Okay. Let's just remember that for now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can leave it at that.
Okay.
I think that's fun.
Yeah. And then, did you have a second?
No.
Okay.
That's the two things. They're for Jewish people.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And
I
it's 12 baskets.
Okay. And then Jesus walks on the water. This was the story that I laughed the most
oh,
at.
For sure.
And it's so funny, but it carries a really deep punch to it. But basically, he's done this food miracle, and then he sends the disciples ahead of him. So we're in verse 45 now, and he's like sending them out, like, hey, take the boat, go to the other side of the lake, like I'll catch up with you. And he goes up to the mountain and prays, and then in the middle of the night, like he just comes walking on the water, and he's like seeing them making headful or painfully. Like making their headway, and he comes walking on the water, and he meant to pass them by.
So this is a very different story than what I have preached before.
From yeah, Matthew. I think it is. I think it's talked about a little bit differently.
He was just meant to go by them. So what was the whole like? What did the disciples think when he was when they left him? What did they think? How was he going to come?
Yeah, I don't know. They're like, yeah, that's just Jesus, man. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, these disciples are like,
Jesus.
Yeah, this is Jesus. Yeah, sure. Like, he'll show up on the other side, I guess. I'll see. And then, but they see him walking on the water and they're like, they think he's a ghost and they like cry out. And then he climbs into the boat and the wind ceases and like, okay, so he's been walking on the water, like he just calmed the storm. And then it says that they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves. but their hearts were hardened. Like, just wait a second. He was walking on the water, but you're astounded because of the... You didn't understand the loaves, the bread, like the feeding miracle he just did. That's why you're astounded.
It's, like, do you think that's what it says, though? Or do you think that they were astounded and they were just, they didn't understand what happened at the loaves?
Yeah, exactly. Because so, this is not what the disciples are saying. This is what the author
is saying.
Mark communicating.
Yeah.
And so they are astounded. And it, at first read, it seems like they're astounded because they didn't understand about the bread. Like, the, or they were astounded over the bread miracle. But what they're astounded because they still haven't understood who Jesus is.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
They were astounded by that he came walking in water.
Yeah.
But they didn't understand because Jesus had like fed 5,000 people with whatever, five loaves and two fish.
Yeah.
They didn't get it.
They didn't get it. But it seems as on first read that like, wait, you're astounded because of the bread miracle, not because of the...
Yeah.
Walking on water.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is the author communicating that, no, these guys were astounded because they didn't understand who Jesus was yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some like a big thing in this first division of the book.
Yeah.
Is that like we see who Jesus is, but we also see that no one really understands who he is.
Yeah.
Like we're with these disciples, like we're reading about them. And we're like, but how do you not understand who they are, who he is? Like, come on, just get it already.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
you get frustrated with
them. Oh, for sure you do.
Like, this is Jesus. Look at what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He just fed all these people. And then...
But you're shocked that he's coming walking on water.
Yeah, like, you don't understand. Why do you not understand who Jesus is? And so that's basically the first big division of the book. First big like part of the book is talking about what all the things Jesus did, and but we still see that no one really understood.
Yeah. It's either his homies or it's the Pharisees that's like, who are you? What are you doing here?
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a story you want to go to next? Or should we go into the next division?
There is so much important things, but let's jump into the division.
Yeah, I think we need to.
And what a division is just a big break, a big shift of focus on what the story is telling us.
It's like part two of the book.
Yeah.
You know how like modern novels can have like parts to them sometimes?
Yeah.
Like, so we've just read part one of Mark the Gospel, and now we're moving into part two. And that starts off with Jesus healing a blind man twice.
Yes.
So that's pretty significant.
Oh, we missed something really important, actually. Sorry.
Okay, no, go back.
So just before this, just before he's healing this blind man, he actually feeds people again.
Yeah, okay, second time.
That's kind of important.
Oh, yeah, okay, you wanted to talk about this.
That's actually really important. Because we see here, and earlier he is hanging out in Decapolis, so he is in Gentile area now.
Yeah.
He has just done a couple of his first healings with Gentiles, talking to this woman, calling her a dog, which is like a really rude way of saying you Gentile. And talking about that, that you don't give the bread to the dog. So he's basically saying, I'm not willing to give you this until I have fed my children.
Yeah. Which are the
Jews.
The Jews. Yeah.
But then her answer is, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs.
Yeah.
She's not even asking for the bread. She's only asking for the crumbs.
And to see, like, her faith is just astonishing.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, I know who you are. Like, I know what you can give me. Like, give it. I want it so bad.
It's super cool. So, we see that he is hanging out with a bunch of Gentiles here.
Mm-hmm.
And he feeds 4,000 people.
Yep.
So now he's fed the 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have 7 baskets left.
Okay.
This is kind of interesting.
Okay.
So we have seen that 2 healings.
Yeah.
Or 2 feedings and 2 different numbers of how much is left in the baskets.
Yeah.
And in the end of this division, what we finish this division is Jesus asking them, when I broke five loaves for the 5,000s, mm-hmm. how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?
12.
12. And the seven for 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?
7.
Do you not understand? Do you understand?
I was confused by this. I'm not sure. I
was very confused by it.
Educate me.
But
please.
I think basically what Jesus is saying here is, I have fed all of Israel, all the 12 tribes of Israel. That's what the 7 to 12 baskets is talking about.
Okay.
And then he,
because that was a feeding in the Jewish territory.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. For the Jewish people. Yeah. And it's 12 tribes, so 12 baskets full. So he has mm-hmm. fed all the tribes.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you have the 4,000 people, mm-hmm. which is Gentiles.
Yeah. So that's a story in Gentile territory. Yeah. Yeah.
And it finished with 7 baskets.
Okay.
And 7 is the number for completion. So basically what he's saying with this story here is that he came and he has fed all the 12 tribes and all of the Gentiles. So he has fed the whole world, and now it is complete.
Whoa.
And that's where he leaves us off before we go into this next part of the book. He leaves us off saying, Mark is basically saying, hey, it's complete. I have fed everyone on earth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I did not see that.
Yeah. That is it's super cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Cool. That's also that we're still learning. There is so much.
Yeah.
Mark is full. I love this gospel.
Yeah. And so this division we keep talking about starts with a blind man.
Yeah. And he, Jesus heals him twice.
Yeah.
And basically he lays his hands on him. He says, do you see anything? And he looked up and said, I see people, but they look like trees walking.
Yeah.
Like his vision is blurry kind of. And then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes and he saw everything clearly.
Mm-hmm. Mind blowing
when you think that this is the way we're starting this division.
Yeah.
Because up until this point, no one has really seen who Jesus is clearly. Like, we get some, like, the disciples are kind of getting it, kind of not. Like, they're like, yeah, we see you, Jesus. You're doing something, but we don't really know.
No. And even more crazy is that straight after this, Peter is professing Jesus as Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, the story right after this healing is Peter saying,
you are the Christ.
You are the Christ. He's like, all of a sudden he sees clearly.
Or is he?
Well.
I don't think Peter is seeing clearly yet.
Okay, yeah.
Because he also charged them to not say anything.
Yeah.
He has understood that Jesus is Christ, but I do not think that Peter clearly see who Jesus is.
Yeah.
Because I think, judging by the stories to come, that Peter still don't get it.
They're kind of
he is still
blurry.
Like, when are we going to take out these Roman homies? Uh-huh. When are we going to buy the swords to take them out?
Mm.
You know, I think they're still there. They're not like seeing clearly yet.
Mm.
But what I think is they're going to see like trees soon, very soon.
Yeah.
So this kind of a three parts to it.
Yeah.
You see a pattern in this section here where you see that Jesus is foretelling his death and his suffering.
Yeah. He does that three times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mark chooses to kind of highlight the suffering quite a lot in these passages here.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory is that is because he's talking to a Roman church that is suffering at the moment.
Yeah.
So he's just highlighting Jesus did this too.
Yeah.
It's not just you. Jesus chose to do this too.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like saying, I know what I came to do. I know that I need to suffer. And we're going to see that like he knows this ahead of time and he chooses to go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks like tons to this audience
who
are like going through persecution, trying to figure out who this king is and is it worth following him. Mm-hmm. And he's basically saying like, hey, Jesus went through this too. Like yeah. he knows what it's like.
Craziness.
Yeah. There is a lot in this division, but I think that's kind of like the big outline.
Yeah, that's
of
the
it.
Big thing. And it finishes off. So it's framed.
Yeah.
So we see a repetition in here, but repetition there's framed between two healings of ice.
Yeah. Yeah, so this division of the book ends in chapter 10, 46.
Yeah.
With the healing of another blind man.
Yes, exactly. There's so much cool things in between there. We see a lot of things that you really could use your tool that you were given in chapter 4 to interpret.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of stuff with the rich young men and stuff like that. But yeah, basically it's Jesus telling the disciples, okay, I'm going to die. Okay, I'm going to die. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to die. Do you see clearly now?
Yeah. And, oh, we should probably, because this is what I picked out as my my key verse.
Did we have the same?
I don't know, but this is the one I picked out. I picked out 10:45.
Yeah.
That's what you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think that is the main verse.
Yeah. And it says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many.
Mm-hmm.
So the Son of Man, referring to this Messiah, like this powerful king that was in their mind, like the people who are hearing Jesus say all these things and seeing Jesus, and they're like, maybe he is the Messiah. Like, he's going to come. Yeah, like, he's going to deliver us. He's going to drive away the Romans. He's going to bring a mighty kingdom of power. And he's basically saying, no, the Son of Man, this Messiah, he came not to be served. He came but to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And to give his life as a ransom for many. Like, this is just turning all the prophecies upside down.
Yeah, because it's all the prophecies. And
or not all the prophecies,
no,
but their expectations.
Expectations yeah, of what the prophecy that. Means. Yeah. Because if you look at a lot of prophecies, it talks about this king. Mm-hmm. So they're expecting this cool guy coming in with a sword and taking down Rome.
Yeah.
But that is never what Jesus is.
Jesus is setting up a different kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, he's here. We get some of our best leadership principles you can get.
Yeah,
that is for a different podcast.
Yeah,
leadership talks with
start a side podcast.
Yeah,
on leadership.
Exactly.
I just want to highlight quickly.
Yeah,
the story,
okay.
It's the request of James and John. I think it's really interesting.
They did not see clearly.
No, but it's also speaking to the original reader. I think the people in Rome. So they walked us through this a little bit in class, and I was like, wow, that's really powerful. So basically we see James and John, and they're coming up to Jesus and saying, hey, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. Just that request of Jesus. It's like, hey, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. And Jesus is basically like, okay, what do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, grant us to sit. So I should say this is in verse 37 now. So grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory. Like in heaven, like we want to sit like by your side. Like these are the, that would be like the honor and authority positions.
Oh, for sure.
To like sit at someone's right and hand side.
It's like the prime minister right, and the financial minister side. Of a country.
Yeah, like you're up there.
Yeah.
And Jesus is asking like, hey, but are you able to go through all these things that I'm going to go through? And they say, yeah, we're able. And Jesus says to them, okay, like you will be able to go through all these things. He's basically foretelling his suffering and death.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, but to sit at my right hand or my left is not mine to grant. And I think he's asking John, James and John, are you willing to go through all of this, even if, like, is it worth it to you if you don't get to sit at my left and right hand? Is it worth following me?
Wow.
And I think that speaks to the Roman readers as well.
Oh, for sure it does.
Who are like, is it worth going through this suffering?
That's super cool.
And Jesus is saying basically, like, you need to make up your mind.
Yeah.
Like, I can't guarantee you this, like, position in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, there is, we know there is an inheritance in there, and we see that throughout the Bible. But he's like, I can't guarantee you this, like, exclusive position, so whatever.
No.
Like, I can't give you a guarantee of certain things, but do you still think it's worth following me?
That's crazy.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah. Anyways, so then this division ends with Jesus healing another blind man.
Yeah.
Bartimaeus.
And it's kind of interesting, just now when you mentioned the other story,
mm-hmm.
Jesus asked, what can I do for you? Or what do you want me to do for you? He's asking exactly the same question to Bartimaeus, but he chooses to heal him.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know what...
I didn't see that at
that
all.
Is, that, it's, yeah, it's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
When you start slowing down and reading the Bible like this that we are doing, you see all these weird stuff.
Cool.
But the important thing to realize is the Bible was written with a mind,
mm-hmm.
with logic.
Yeah.
It's not just...
Random
things. There is a reason to everything.
Yeah, and these authors are like, they're experts at what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, they're really good authors.
Like, and we go into chapter 11, end of 10, chapter 11, you see, depending on how you look at it, it's either
chiasm?
Chiasm or okay. Repetition of A, B, A, B, A, B.
Yeah, interchange.
Yeah, interchange.
So...
No, let's not go there.
You don't want to talk about
time.
It?
We don't have time, sorry.
I just think the fig tree is really fun.
Yeah, the fig tree is a really cool story. Basically, he says, you are not bearing fruit. You don't deserve to live.
Yeah, and then he's comparing that to the temple.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so... Maybe we can leave our audience with like, hey, if you want to look into this story, I would really look into it with like how it changes between the temple and the fig tree.
You can't read the fig tree without reading the temple, and you can't read the temple without reading the fig tree.
They're talking about each other.
Yeah.
So
they're explaining each other.
If you've ever wondered about the fig tree, just look at the stories around it with the temple, and maybe you can draw some connections there.
It's interesting. I even got a different revelation about it than our teacher did.
Okay,
we had a very similar, but not the same.
Yeah.
Let's jump into chapter 13, a chapter that a lot of people is very afraid of.
Yeah.
Which is kind of messed up because we don't really need to be afraid of it at all.
No.
We're reading this chapter and we're seeing. Talking about end times, and we're like, when is the end time?
Yeah.
And a disclaimer.
Uh-huh.
It's not true. I am sorry, everyone out there. I might break your world, and you might think I speak heresy here, but we don't need to mission to everyone in the world before Jesus can come back.
Whoa. Dropping some.
Yeah. Because... Actually,
big bombs here.
Yeah, just how Mark is writing this story, we have to read it with interchange. So actually, he's not telling one story here; he's telling two stories at the same time. But why I'm saying this, there has been a lot of teachings on this, and there is a lot of people that I respect too that has said this.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at the text, this is actually not true.
Yeah.
Because what this is talking about is something that already has happened.
Yeah.
And according to...
At least that's what we have seen when we read this.
But so here's why I base this statement on two.
Yeah.
You have the reader who read this
mm-hmm.
is not acknowledging those 6,530 some people groups out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not their world.
No.
When they're talking about the world, they're talking about their
world. The Roman
world.
Empire.
Yeah.
Basically.
And Paul, in one of his letters, actually says, we have reached all of the world and all of the nations.
Yeah.
So according to the Bible, interpreting the Bible with the Bible, within the time that the Bible was written,
yeah,
all the world had been reached with the gospel, mm-hmm. according to the Bible.
Yeah.
So we don't need to reach all the groups, but we still need to reach them because they deserve it.
Yeah.
Because the word of God needs to come out to people.
Yeah. And because Jesus is coming back, we want to make sure that people exactly. have heard.
Different story.
Yeah.
But for to fulfill this prophecy here, that has already happened.
Okay. So do you want to walk us through the structure really quick here? Because I feel like that's important.
Yeah, it might be important. Yeah.
In order to explain what we're saying yes. right now.
So Peter, James, John, and Andrew, so the original four homies, mm-hmm. they went up with Jesus sitting on Mount of Olives, looking over the temple.
Yeah.
And just before this, they had walked out of the temple and someone had said, oh, these wonderful buildings. Mm-hmm. And Jesus sassily answered, do you see these great buildings? There will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down.
Yeah.
So first, when I read this the first time, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. he's talking about the kingdom, or like he's talking about like himself
okay.
or whatever.
Yeah.
But it actually is the physical temple he's talking about there.
Yeah. In Jerusalem.
Yeah. yeah. In Jerusalem. But then we go down, look a bit more, mm-hmm. and he asks, or he tells them, see that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name, and continues on those things. And
then they're basically asking when yeah, is this exactly. going to happen? When is the destruction coming?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So they will see all these things, but these are just the beginning of the birth pains.
Yeah.
These are just the beginning. You don't need to worry when this is happening. Like this is going to happen, but you don't need to like be worried. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
In verse 9, it changes.
Yeah.
Be on your guard, for they will deliver you over to councils and shenanigans.
Yeah, and he's talking.
And I there you have verse 10. The gospel must first be proclaimed in all of the nations.
Yeah, and I think he is, like, it's important to notice that he's talking to them.
Yeah,
he's talking
oh, absolutely.
To he's Peter, not talking James, to me. John and Andrew. He's like saying, you guys, hey, watch out, because they're going to deliver you over to councils. And you will be beaten in synagogues.
He's not even talking to the 12. He's just talking to those four. So basically in this whole story here, he's talking to the four. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we need to have that lens on understanding what they're saying.
Yeah.
For sure.
And yeah, and in that, like you said, that's when he's talking about, and the gospel must first be proclaimed to all nations.
Yeah. And there he's talking about that persecution will happen. So he basically foretells the persecution of the church that Mark is writing to here.
Yeah.
And stuff
and,
like that.
And we see these things happening in Acts.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
They are delivered over to councils yeah. and stuff like that.
And then he, all of a sudden he kind of changes his speed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he starts talking about, but when you see the abomination of desolation standing here, he ought not to be. Mm-hmm. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Mm-hmm. So what we see here is there's going to be craziness happening, mm-hmm. but there's actually a personified person here. So there's one person who's going to bring this destruction, this craziness to Jerusalem.
Okay.
And when you see this, then take everything you, or don't take anything. Just run.
Yeah.
Run. Jesus run away.
Get out.
It's like, he says, it's going to be craziness. It's going to be sucky uh-huh. to live in Jerusalem or live around there
yeah.
for you. But you stay there because the gospel has to be proclaimed. Uh-huh. But when this happens, if you get a chance, get out.
Yeah.
If you, like, it's just, he has so many examples of,
yeah.
of this happens in this person and this, just run. Yeah. Don't take anything, run.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting how Jesus gives him them authority there. Mm-hmm. And then he goes back to like, but in those days after the tribulations, mm-hmm. the sun will be dark and the moon will not give light. Mm-hmm.
And in 26, it says, and then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds.
Yeah.
So.
Who are they?
I think he's talking to future people.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, for sure.
Whenever this happens, whenever mm-hmm. the Son of Man comes, then they will see. But it's not saying like it's going to be the tribulations, and then right after.
No.
It's like when the Son of Man will come back. No, like he's talking about the tribulation, about the temple. And then he switches, which is like, this is where the interchange comes in how the author communicates.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he's talking about a future thing. And he's not talking about you anymore.
No.
He's not talking straight to the Peter, James, John, and Andrew. He's talking about they.
Because the pronoun has changed from you till they.
Yeah.
And then he comes in talking about a fig tree again. And he actually promised them, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all of these things takes place. So basically he says that this tribulation that's talking about, we don't need to worry about that because that was going to happen in the time of the homies, friends at least. If they didn't survive till this time, they were at least going to have like their family was going to be alive when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think actually is talked about here is when Jerusalem got like destroyed year 70.
Yeah.
We had this really terrible person, Titus, come in. Not the Titus in the Bible, but another Titus.
Yeah, another Titus.
He came in and he just tore Jerusalem apart.
Yeah.
And interesting story, they actually had to pull the temple apart stone by stone.
Yeah.
Because they started a big fire in there. So all the gold melted and seeped into the rocks.
Mm.
So to get all the gold with them home to Rome, they had to pull the temple apart stone by stone to get that gold out.
Which is exactly what Jesus said.
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy.
There will be not left one stone upon another.
No.
Yeah.
So he's talking about that.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking too. Like this is, he's talking about this that happened in 70 AD,
mm-hmm.
The destruction of Jerusalem. But in this, he's interchanging between talking about that and he's interchanging about talking about when the Son of Man is coming back, mm-hmm. which is a future thing.
Yeah. And then he goes back to that. So after he said this, in verse 32, he goes back to that and talking about how he will come back. But you don't know the hour and the day, but be awake. So basically here, with this whole little part, he's foretelling a big event that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he's foretelling when he's going to come back. But he doesn't even know.
Yeah, that's
only
crazy.
The Father knows.
Yeah.
But we see them as one. They're kind of lined up next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not really the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's they're kind of pulled apart, actually. It's like looking at a mountain range and the mountain looks super close. But when you come to like the side, you can see that it maybe is miles upon miles upon miles between those mountaintops
mm-hmm.
that look like they sit next to each other. And that's a little how this story is portrayed too.
Oh, you're talking about the
interchange of the difference between when the tribulations is going to happen and when Jesus is going to come back.
Yeah.
We think that sometimes when we read these, we see this and it's like, looks like they're going to happen at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're not.
And it's called telescoping prophecy or something like that.
We see that in some other places in the Bible too.
Where there will be a prophecy and, but maybe only one, there will be one prophecy said in like one time,
mm-hmm.
but maybe,
this, we're going to hear this. So we have to cut this out. I think we have to sit and cut a bit on this.
Oh my God.
It's a lot of stuff.
There's so much in there.
Oh. What are we going to do? We have to cut out something. We can talk about that later.
Yeah.
I almost want to redo the whole thing and just go much quicker. 40 minutes. We don't have time to do that now. Okay.
Okay.
Where were we?
Telescoping prophecy.
Yeah.
Do you want me to explain that?
Yes.
Okay, so basically, like, what we see here is a telescoping prophecy, which is basically when a prophecy is said. We see this a lot in the Old Testament, I believe. But a prophecy is said, and it might be like we see it as one part, like this is all one thing and it's going to happen at the same time. But there might be like one thing that comes true, and then like we know that, okay, then the other things are going to come true as well in this prophecy. But they're not necessarily talking about things that are happening at the same time, like moment in time. Like they might be happening at different times. But we kind of want to see it as like one thing. But it's actually like a prophecy, and it has several different like timestamps in it.
Yeah.
And you only see that when like, oh, this part came true. Okay. And like we can trust that the other parts are going to come true too. So this chapter 13 is kind of that interchange telescoping prophecy where it's like, okay, first this thing is going to happen, and then the Son of Man is going to come back at some point.
But we don't know.
But we don't know.
And no one knows, but be awake.
Yeah.
Wow. And okay. Then there's just so much happening here. The last couple of chapters, of course, it's the prepping for Jesus to die.
Yeah.
When he is prepping his disciples,
mm-hmm.
And how Jesus is, or Judas is plotting to betray Jesus.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how the Pharisees just wanted him dead so badly.
Yeah.
They made up stuff.
Yeah. We see Jesus gets arrested. And we're moving pretty quickly here, but he gets arrested, and in chapter 14, 53 and forward, he gets put on this trial. He gets led before the council. And it's basically just like the mock of a trial.
Yeah.
Like, they, like, so many people coming up, but they're saying, like, all these different stories. There's, like, no one can really, like, come up with anything to actually accuse Jesus with.
Yeah.
And it's only in the end when the chief priest or the high priest actually ask Jesus, like, have you nothing to say? And Jesus is like, not saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, are you the Christ? Are you the Son of the Blessed? And I think it's cool, because at this point, Jesus could have been like, still keeping silent, like not saying anything. And he wouldn't have been, you know, they wouldn't have had anything against him.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power. And so he's basically like, he's not denying who he is, and he's choosing. He knows he has to make this choice to suffer.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And
it's crazy.
Yeah. And then that's what they finally accuse him of.
Yeah. For heresy.
Yeah.
Seeing that he's God.
Yeah. And I think this as well speaks to the Roman audience of like Jesus. He like didn't deny.
No.
Like when you get put before trials, like, know that Jesus has been here too.
Yeah.
And when they ask you, are you a Christian? Like, know that Jesus has been there too. And he said, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that was going to get him killed.
Yeah.
So they can trust in a savior that has gone before them, that has done, like, gone through what they're going through.
Yeah.
I think that's so powerful how Mark like really like communicates that to his audience.
It's like he's writing the whole gospel and focusing so much on communicating to them through small little his nudges.
Yeah. And then Jesus
dies.
Gets crucified and dies. We're moving kind of quickly here, but
yeah. This is the climax of the story.
Uh-huh.
When Jesus gets crucified.
Yeah.
He dies and he raises again.
Yeah.
But this is what we are building our faith on. This is what's the climax of everything for us as Christians today. Jesus came and died.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
And there is so many cool little stories in there.
Yeah.
But
we're running out of time.
Yeah. But it is so many cool, small little things.
Yeah. Should we touch on how the book ends?
Yeah, for sure. We should just throw it out there and then people can deal with it themselves.
Okay. So we get to chapter 16. And basically it's a story of Mary and Mary. and they're going to the tomb, and they see that the stone is rolled away, and there's no one there. Like there's this young man in white who's saying, "You're seeking Jesus. He's not here." And then they run away, and they don't say anything to anyone, for they were afraid. And that's verse 8. And then this is the controversy, because some of the earliest manuscripts that we have of Mark ends here.
Yeah.
It ends with the women seeing that he is resurrected, he's not here. And they run away and they say nothing to anyone, for they were afraid.
See, I like that ending there.
You like that ending?
Yeah, I like that ending.
I like it too.
After that, we see how basically what happens in the other Gospels. He goes out and he meets with people, mm-hmm. and he shows himself.
And then we have the Great Commission.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it should be said that, like, we have manuscripts that have this in it.
Yeah.
But some of the absolute earliest ones that we have don't have that last part with the Great Commission in it.
So there is a bit of different ideas on why this has happened.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some of the earliest manuscripts just lost the last page. Maybe someone thought like, oh, this is not the full complete story, so let's add this.
Yeah.
Or they were just like, this is not the complete story. We need to add this.
Yeah. And I think we're used to that ending, the full ending, kind of, or that added on ending. But if we just talk about it quickly, like, what would it mean if it ended with them saying nothing to anyone and being afraid? Like, what do you think? Like, if that's how Mark wanted to end it, why do you think that is?
Because I think that he tells us in the first verse that he's going to end it like this.
Okay.
Because he's saying the beginning of. He never says the end of. Mm-hmm. He's starting. He has a very open, like a very clear, this is the beginning of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, if you're going to start with something like that, you should end with something. This is the end.
Yeah.
But I think that he left the end out because he's like, here, let's continue to write the gospel.
Yeah.
Let's continue to write this story.
Yeah.
This story is not ended here.
Yeah.
The story is going to keep going.
Because an ending like this kind of provokes the reader to like, wait, what? We just walked through this whole gospel of Jesus Christ and we finally know who he is. And like, he came to like do this for the world. He came to die. He wasn't the Messiah who was going to like conquer with might and power. Like, he came to serve. And we're just seeing this amazing Jesus. And it can't end like this. It can't end with them not telling anyone,
for they were afraid. Yeah. Like,
I think this speaks to the Roman audience again.
Yeah.
Like, for they were afraid. And they're like, dang it, I'm afraid. Am I not telling anyone because I'm afraid? No, this can't be how it... This is not the end. That's not how we're going to end it.
No,
I'm going to go out and tell, and even if I die.
Yeah.
And actually knowing then that faithfulness of those Roman Christians is why we have this gospel.
Yeah.
And maybe even why we are Christians today.
That's crazy.
Because they, in the face of persecution and death, most likely, we're like, no, we're going to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Insane. So cool. So cool. So there, we're finishing off our episode on Bob Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening again, tuning into our little weekly podcast.
Yeah.
And again, thank you so much to all our sponsors that is sponsoring this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people in our families that is letting us be on the mission field to explore this word.
Yeah.
But also an opportunity we have to actually share this with you.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Please read your Bibles.
Yeah.
Spread the good news that is in the Bibles.
Yeah.
But put on the glasses of reading the Bibles accurately.
Yeah.
So thank you. Have a good week.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.